Mr. Chief Justice,
the police of the court.
I never felt more like a hooker down by the bus station than I did when I was running for the Supreme Court.
This is Life of the Law. I'm Nancy Mullane. The law isn't always black and white. For instance, let's say your neighbor wants to drill for oil in their backyard. It could be loud and it might pollute the groundwater. You're worried. Who do you turn to? Who has the authority under the law to decide whether your neighbor can drill or not? People living in states like Ohio want their local governments to decide, and they've gone as far as to change the state constitution to grant local governments something called home rule, which gives locals the power to govern themselves as long as local law doesn't conflict with state and federal law. Seems clear enough, or so it seemed for people living in Ohio until the oil boom came to town, pitting neighbors who wanted a piece of the oil action against neighbors who didn't want to live with an oil well. Question is, when it comes to oil and gas, who has the power to decide who can drill and where? In part two of our series on A Fair Fight for a Fair Court, Life of the Law's Jonathan Hirsch has the story.
Drilling for oil promises big things for people in a state like Ohio. Wealth for local landowners, free oil for people who lease their land, an influx of new jobs. But to some in northeastern Ohio, all of that sounds like it might be too good to be true. As for drilling itself, what it actually sounds like is this. This is what Pat McCrudden says she's been hearing from her front porch of her home every night, all night, for the past 3 years. It's the sound of a fracking well. Fracking is a specific way of drilling for natural gas, where liquid is injected at high pressures deep into the ground. The liquid breaks apart the rock, which releases the natural gas. And it's controversial because, among other things, it uses a lot of water, can lead to pollution, and may even cause earthquakes.
Well, let's see, it started about
McCrudden lives in a small suburban community about 10 miles from Youngstown, Ohio. It's called Westwood Lake. And according to McCrudden, the well has brought all kinds of things to Westwood Lake. Noise, traffic from waste disposal trucks, felling of the trees that used to grow right across from her front porch. McCrudden says she didn't want the well, but that she and her neighbors at the Westwood Lake Mobile Home Park weren't consulted about it.
Did you try to stop it at all?
Let me tell you, I went to the county commissioners. I went to the township trustees. I went up the ladder with Capri Caffaro. She's representative in the state of Ohio, Senator Caffaro.
In 2013, State Senator Capri Caffaro's office arranged a meeting with representatives from the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, the state agency that regulates oil and gas leases. Also, FYI, for the rest of the story, we'll be calling the agency the ODNR, since this is how most Ohioans refer to it.
And the top five men came in and sat down, and then we started talking to each other, and I said, "Who's responsible for permitting this?" This guy says, "I am." And I says, "What were you thinking? What were you thinking? Putting that over there, there's 335 homes in this whole area here, and it's very compacted. It's a mobile home park." I says, what are you doing that for? And I says, "The noise and everything that we've had, the lights."
McCrudden says the representative seemed sympathetic, but not enough to shut down the well. And McCrudden's situation is pretty common in northeastern Ohio. A resident can object to a well in their town, but if the ODNR has already approved it, there's little that can be done. In Ohio, the ODNR is the authority that decides the placement of well sites. But then, the city of Monroe Falls, 40 miles from McCrudden's house, sued an energy company for attempting to drill a fracking well in their town. Suddenly, Pat McCrudden and a whole lot of other people in Ohio were paying close attention to Monroe Falls. For an energy company to drill a well, first, they've got to get landowners to sign a lease. And if you're a landowner, there are some perks.
At the time we wanted it, yeah. Because he said that we'd get free gas, you know, for the house. That's all I know about it, because my husband always did all the talking, you know.
That's Donna Willingham, a resident of Monroe Falls, a small city of about 5,000 people on the banks of the Cuyahoga River. In 2011, Donna's husband, Joe Willingham, reached out to David Beck, the CEO of a 15-person company based in Ohio called Beck Energy. Joe wanted to negotiate a lease on the Willingham property. David Beck applied for a drilling permit with the ODNR. The ODNR gave its stamp of approval, and a deal was struck with the Willinghams. Donna Willingham says she and her husband trust David Beck.
He's a sweetheart. He really is. And he's a Christian man and everything, and he's really a good guy, in my opinion.
But the city government of Monroe Falls said Beck Energy also needed to submit plans for its approval before any drilling could happen because of something in the Ohio Constitution known as Home Rule. In a nutshell, the Home Rule Amendment says that cities can create their own laws as long as they don't interfere with state or federal laws. But Beck Energy refused to go through the city permitting process, citing changes made to Ohio's oil and gas leasing law in 2004. New language had given the ODNR, quote, the sole and exclusive authority, unquote, over drilling leases in the state. And Beck Energy said that this meant drilling was out of Monroe Falls' jurisdiction.
So the city of Monroe Falls filed for an injunction against Beck Energy's drilling operation in the Summit County Common Pleas Court.
Donna Willingham doesn't think the city handled the situation well.
Oh, yeah, they were real buttheads about it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they were.
What did they do?
The mayor we had, Mayor Larson, he just had his own opinions about everything, and the well wasn't one of them. He just was so adamant about not, you know, drilling it. So it didn't happen.
The city of Monroe Falls won, but then Beck Energy filed an appeal, and the case ended up at the Ohio State Supreme Court, where it would set a precedent for millions of dollars in oil and gas leases all over the state. Because it stood to have such big implications, a lot of people were paying attention, like Michelle Garman of Vianna, Ohio. Vianna is a small township about 50 miles east of Monroe Falls. Michelle Garman lives on the state road that goes through town, next to a local airport.
It's Michelle Garman. I've lived in Vianna for about, going on 16, almost 17 years. My husband's family has been on this land for 5 generations.
Garman says that she loves Vianna because it's always been a good place to raise her son, Dominic. He's 16.
My son was born here in Vianna. I enjoyed the smaller school. The smaller, close-knit community. Like I said, you know, I like the fact everybody knows each other. My husband calls it me having my nose in everyone else's business, but I like it, so.
In 2015, an injection well, the kind of well used to dispose of toxic waste generated from fracking, erupted down the street from her house. And a nearby pond was contaminated with a reported 2,000 gallons of waste. Still, Garman says that even then, she didn't spend a lot of time thinking about how injection wells might negatively impact her community.
Because I'm guilty of not paying attention until I found out one was going next to me.
She does, however, remember the day she found out that an injection well was going to be built next door.
But I think it was about 2 years ago, they put the legal notice in the paper, and for the permit to get the injection well, the permit to drill is what it would have been. And luckily, my husband, he actually reads the legal notices every day. I can't bring myself to do it because it's boring.
Garman and her husband wrote a letter of objection to the ODNR. Her husband, Tom, was so upset that he wanted to leave the area, to move away from the land where 5 generations of his family had lived.
And he was furious. He was actually ready to pick up and leave. It actually became kind of, it's still a contention between us. So we're like, I have no way, no how letting anybody push me off this land. And he's more like, you know, I've had it, you know, they're going to just let the area go to crap.
Garman approached Vianna's township trustees, but they didn't take action against the drilling company. Unlike Monroe Falls, the township of Vianna left the decision to drill entirely up to the ODNR.
And the problem being, the only other people left to object to it here would have been the airport on the other side, and there's a vacant property across the street. After that, there was really no more neighbors. So.
Tom Houlihan is an attorney and a resident of Monroe Falls. He also represented the city before the Ohio State Supreme Court in Monroe Falls versus Beck Energy in 2014.
For 100 years prior to 2004, Ohio had a system where cities determined where within their boundaries oil and gas wells could go.
During the oral arguments, Houlihan argued that Beck Energy should have approached the city government of Monroe Falls instead of going around it. According to Houlihan, even if the state oil and gas statute provided sole and exclusive authority to the ODNR, it didn't mean that a company could just show up in a city and start drilling without discussing it with local officials.
The way the Department of Natural Resources is construing the statute is kind of an extreme position, given that even cities, even states like Texas and Oklahoma, major oil and gas drillers, allow their cities to determine what land is available within the cities for drilling, and then the state controls the details of the drilling operation.
Judges on the case also showed concern about the implications of their ruling. Justice Paul Pfeiffer suggested that the state's reading of the oil and gas statute had elevated the ODNR's director to a godlike status, because local opponents would effectively have no power of appeal in the courts. Here's Justice Pfeiffer questioning Beck Energy attorney John Keller during the oral arguments, which were recorded.
This is a pretty important permitting process. So unlike, for example, the location of windmills, which goes through the Power Siting Commission, there is just, for those who object, there's no place to go.
The general...
The political solution... But in terms of courts, there is no access to courts, period, right?
Because the General Assembly decided in 2004 to give the state the sole and exclusive authority
to be God in this case, right?
Pardon?
To be God. The Director of Natural Resources is God in this case.
Heidi Gorovitz Robertson is a professor of law at Cleveland State University. She followed the case closely.
Monroe Falls lost. The ordinances were struck down. It was as close as a Supreme Court decision could possibly be. There were three justices in the majority, three in the dissent, and one hanging out in the middle.
The one, quote, hanging out in the middle was Justice Terrence O'Donnell. And the situation was what's called a plurality decision. The court couldn't agree on exactly why Monroe Falls lost. What a majority of the justices did agree on was that Beck Energy should be allowed to move forward with drilling on the Willingham's land. Supreme Court Justice William O'Neill, one of the dissenters, saw the decision as a sign that oil and gas companies had swayed lawmakers in the Ohio General Assembly into creating laws in their favor. He wrote in his dissent that, quote, "What the drilling industry has bought and paid for in campaign contributions, they shall receive." I spoke with almost two dozen Ohio residents who live near drill sites for this story. And of the people I spoke with, all but a few expressed concern over oil and gas companies using money and their lobbies to sway political opinion in their favor, including Michelle Garman of Vianna, the woman who now lives directly across from a large injection well site.
There's a lot of issues around there about, you know, I hear talk about, you know, who paid for whose campaign and things like that. Which, I mean, that's an issue that goes all the way up. You know, campaign funding, you know, the special interests pay for people's campaigns, so why do they want to regulate them?
An Ohio Supreme Court justice named Judith French wrote the lead opinion in the Monroe Falls versus Beck Energy case. When she ran for election to the Supreme Court, French had received over $1 million in campaign contributions, including contributions from oil and gas companies. She also received funds from the American Petroleum Institute, which filed a brief supporting Beck Energy in the Monroe Falls case. And another one of her contributors was a law firm called Voorhees. This is the firm that represents Beck Energy. So Justice French did not remove herself from the bench during Monroe Falls versus Beck Energy. She was one of the judges that ruled in favor of Beck Energy. I wanted to hear how Justice French looks at the issue of campaign finance in the courts. The Office of the Justice didn't return my request for interviews. Instead, I went to the state capitol in Columbus to speak with lawmakers and other members of the judiciary. I wanted to know, what does the state Senate and the judiciary think about the growing conflict between state and local laws when it comes to oil and gas? And are campaign contributions part of the problem? There, I sat down with Representative Dan Ramos, who serves the District of Lorain County in northeastern Ohio and supports campaign finance reform.
When energy companies come in here, they'll have a lobbyist or a team of lobbyists, you know, and come in with the suit and the tie and call you sir and, or ma'am and say the same story. We want to bring jobs to your community. This is going to create wealth in your community. This is going to do X, Y, and Z.
Ramos says that oil and gas lobbyists help manage those interests.
And they keep up. Have you heard any complaints about this? We're going to have this, you know, we're going to have the well, we're going to have the well. If you have any problems, you tell them to call me. You do that. I'm not trying to say they're buying influence, but what they're doing is it's another touch. It's another touch from company X, another touch from company Y, another touch from company Z, and from the general oil and gas lobby saying, hey, I'm your old friend. Remember me? You know, just again, if you have any issues, if anybody has any issues, I'm here. Here's my cell phone. You can get me anytime, day or night.
According to Ramos, all of this stems from the fact that political campaigns for public office are financed by individuals and private businesses.
So we need to review the entire thing. I think if we wanted to start somewhere, I think the judiciary would be a reasonable place to do so, just because we're all supposed to be impartial.
While I was in Ohio, I met with State Supreme Court Justice Paul Pfeiffer, one of the justices who ruled on the Monroe Falls case. We grabbed a booth in the local Bob Evans, a breakfast chain like IHOP or Denny's, and I asked him, do judicial elections influence decisions made on the court? Justice Pfeiffer.
I never felt more like a hooker down by the bus station than I did when I was running for the Supreme Court.
Justice Pfeiffer says he doesn't think campaign contributions from oil and gas interests played a role in how justices decided the Monroe Falls versus Beck Energy case. But he does say that special interest money in campaigns has affected how judges have voted in the past.
I'm just following.
Yeah. It's indirect. The folks that I serve with and the folks I've served with in the past would deny it. But it's how they got there. It's million-dollar efforts by independent expenditure groups.
What's clear right now is that Ohioans like Pat McCrudden from Westwood Lake and Michelle Garman of Vianna don't have a lot of say when a drill site pops up in their town. Back in Vianna, at one point during my interview with Michelle Garman, she tells me to get up and walk to the window. We both crouch down to look out. Garman's front yard is an empty, marshy field bordered by a fence. Beyond the fence is a large plot of land the size of a football field. And in the middle of it, a tower of steel piping that makes up the injection well. When the well was being built, Garman says, stadium-style lighting from the well site flooded into her kitchen at all hours. She says her son Dominic is concerned about the safety of the well, too. And he asks her, what if the kind of contamination that happened down the road also happens in their backyard?
And he gets very bent out of shape about it. He gets very, you know, maybe I talked about it too much around him. I don't know. But, you know, he does. He says, you know, what's going to happen to me? You know, is this going to cause problems for me? Am I in danger? Is this dangerous?
Garman says that at the end of the day, it's her son that she's the most worried about.
Since he's been little, I've been, you know, the mama bear or whatever. You know, I've solved all the problems. Don't worry, it's on me. I got it. And it scares me because this is one I don't think I can just solve.
For Life of the Law, I'm Jonathan Hirsch.
I say, water, water, wave your story. Over, under, till the morning. And leave me the way that you go home. And I will feel no evil.
Rig the System, part two of our series on A Fair Fight for a Fair Court, was reported by Jonathan Hirsch and edited by Annie Aviles, with sound design and final production by Shani Avaram. Thanks to Life of the Law's production team, Alyssa Bernstein, Ashley Cleek, and Kirsten Jesuits-Heidel for their support. Jim Bennett was our engineer. Music by Blue Dot Sessions and Wolf and Crow. Life of the Law is part of the Panoply Network of podcasts from Slate, connecting sophisticated listeners with top publishers and thinkers. You can hear all 80 episodes of Life of the Law on iTunes, Stitcher, or on your favorite podcast app. You can also find Life of the Law on PRX, Public Radio Exchange. Take a few minutes, listen to an episode, and post a review of Life of the Law on iTunes, like us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. Each time we publish a new episode, we send people who have subscribed to our newsletter a behind-the-scenes look at Life of the Law that includes notes from our reporters, reviews of plays, books, movies, with previews of upcoming episodes. You can subscribe to get our newsletter on our website, lifeofthelaw.org. We're a nonprofit project of the Tide Center, and we're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Open Society Foundations, the Law and Society Association, the National Science Foundation, and the Proteus Fund. Visit our website, lifeofthelaw.org, and make a very much appreciated donation to help pay for the direct costs of producing our episodes. It just takes a minute. Life of the Law is looking for a few good interns for the summer. If you're interested, send an email to connect@lifeofthelaw.org. Next on Life of the Law.
And if they ask me a question, I'm going to answer it, but I'm not going to whine. I can't be involved in the politics of it, and I certainly can't just go up to a senator and fuss with them about my situation. Nobody wants to hear a whiner. You know, we've got our big boy britches on. We're going to do the job.
That's next on Life of the Law. I'm Nancy Mullane. Thanks for listening.